Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us today is Simpiwe Dana. Simpiwe Dana is one of South Africa's most soulful singers, renowned around the world and adored for her impressive vocal prowess. She is an artist who employs a true cultural and African identity in her art form. Her albums have earned numerous awards, both in South Africa and internationally. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
It's great to have you here. And I think to start off with, if you could please share with us some of the memories from when you were growing up, what influenced you in all those years, and what's left its mark on you the most to make you the person you are today?
Well, I grew up in the village. I'm an African village child. My earliest memories would be running wild, really. We'd do our chores, then we had the whole day to ourselves, and the whole of nature was basically our backyard. And there was a lot of forest, and then we also had a river. So we'd go hunting for birds in the forest, and then we'd go play in the river. And then when we got tired of playing in the river, then we'd... There actually was quite a lot that we could use to play. We used to make rope out of grass, and then we'd play skip. We used to find cardboards, and then we would sail down. Where I come from, it's quite hilly, lots of hills. So we'd sail down the hills, and you know that for me was my childhood. I grew up in nature, and from a very early age, I imagine, I got to respect my environment and to understand my role within my environment and also how to survive.
Well, it sounded
from my childhood.
Like such a free, open, spirited way to have grown up, and I'd almost put it as a luxury. And you think of how confined our young children are today with the way they grow up.
It's very funny because I got to understand much later that I grew up quite poor. I never felt like I was poor.
But rich in environment.
There was so much to do. I mean, we didn't necessarily need money that much because we planted our own, you know, food. And when it came to clothes, everyone around me also wore torn, tattered, old, faded clothes, you know, two sizes too small, and most people didn't have shoes. It wasn't a big deal to us. You know, I only got to understand that actually I grew up quite poor when I moved from the village to a town.
And what factors would you say influenced you whilst you were growing up in terms of shaping your development? Did you always know that you wanted to go into music?
Well, you know, in Africa, every chore, every moment has a soundtrack. I don't know, maybe singing makes work light. I don't know, but almost everything went with song. You know, growing up, whether it was the women cooking up a storm because there's going to be some ceremony of some sorts, or whether it was my grandmother when she was sweeping the yard, you know, whether it was a drunk man stumbling home, you know, there was music. There was always music all around me, even in church, even in school.
So almost the rhythm of life.
Yes, it was. You know, there was a soundtrack to every moment growing up. So that's my earliest introduction into music, and I believe that also is the one that has shaped my musicality or shaped me as an artist more than whatever else I learned after, because that I absorbed naturally, you know, and it was basically like breathing. And then I got to also learn how to sing even better in church. I used to love church a lot, and then I was also in the school choir. That also helped shape a professional understanding of how to sing.
And all of those influences have culminated in you winning and being nominated for several awards. At the list that I currently have with me is 6 South African Music Awards.
Seven
now. 2 Metro FM Awards.
Yes.
For Best Female Artist and Best Contemporary Jazz. 1 AVO Session Award in Europe, alongside with Elton John, who I believe received the Lifetime Achievement AVO Session Award.
Mm-hmm.
Metropolitan Eastern Cape Awards and Culture Award, and a Pan South African Language Award.
Yes.
And I think these are just few of the celebratory factors that mark elements in your career. Can you share with us some of the landmarks in your career?
I'm celebrating 10 years in the industry this year.
Well, that's an achievement in itself.
It is, you know, and I'll tell you why. Because, you know, there is such a fast food culture when it comes to music, or as they call it, entertainment. I don't even like the word, because not all music is for entertainment, you know. Not all art is pop. So to be around for this long, for me, is quite an achievement. I mean, there are so many artists that I started off with who are no longer.
Simpiro, what would you attribute to your longevity in the business?
Well, my music is not trendy. It's not fashionable.
So
it does not go out of season. Because, you know, it does not follow, I don't follow trends. I believe that that is the secret to my staying power. And also my music is quite honest. So many people, you know, what I write about, it resonates with them. And I think that's the other part, is the honesty and the refusal to be trendy.
And in terms of the style, could you share with us some of the style in your music?
Well, my music has been called many, many things. As you mentioned, I have a few jazz awards. But I believe that if I were to try and box my sound, because, I mean, I have, you know, my influences vary. Like they're far and wide. But if I were to box it, I would say my sound is Afro soul.
I think that's a wonderful expression.
I think so too.
Rich, lyrical. And currently your newest album is Firebrand. Can
yes.
you tell us a little bit more about the album, how it came about?
If you notice, I have 4 albums first, right? And if you notice, the first 3, there is a theme that you can see, you know, it's within the same theme. Each album is a continuation of. And with Firebrand, it's a different take on my musicality. Well, not completely, because, I mean, it's still me who's writing the songs. But the music is lighter. I guess after turning 30, I started to become lighter as a person myself. You know, I don't take myself as seriously as I used to. I don't know, maybe it's old age. Who knows? But I don't take myself as seriously as I used to. And I feel like I'm growing younger as I grow older. Mentally, I don't know how to explain it, but I mean, I know that many, many artists, they are very, very young at heart. I just didn't expect to be one of them. But yeah, so that is very much reflected in this new album, Firebrand. I mean, I still talk about heavy issues, you know, social commentary and all of that, but I also speak a lot of love in this album. And also what I also did differently is that I broke my own rule of singing mainly in my African language, Xhosa, and I wanted this album to be more embracing and the message to be heard by many more people. And so quite a big amount of the album is in English.
Well, that'll obviously open up more of a market. And do you think that that'll also give you more opportunity for attracting listeners from abroad in other areas?
Well, yes. But even though I was singing in Xhosa, I was getting that. But I just feel like the content, you know, of the music, the message in the music was not being, it was getting lost, you know, because not everyone speaks is Xhosa. And if I'm trying to, you know, then spread my message, then I had to, you know, you know, just compromise a little on my rules.
Well, I think that gives a greater opportunity for people who are not isiXhosa speaking to understand the content.
Totally.
And whilst we're talking from a content point of view, music has always been a huge inspiration to people, and occasionally it's been exploited to influence from a political point of view and social agendas around the world. Now, you yourself are renowned for your social commentary, particularly of the plight of the poor and the dispossessed. How do you see the role of musicians in that regard?
We, as people in the public eye, you know, we are blessed because people listen to us, and we also get the spaces to speak that, you know, most people do not get to have. And as someone who comes from a very poor and dispossessed background, I have chosen to use my voice, you know, to bring about a better day for this beautiful continent of ours, in however small contribution I can, you know, avail or put in. So I'm not saying that every artist should do this. You know, we all have different roles to play. But I personally, I have chosen to use my voice for change. I would like that when I leave this planet or this life, I would like to leave the world a much better place than how I found it. So then I use my voice for activism. I'm a social activist. I'm particularly interested in education. I'm particularly interested in the psychology of oppression and how we should be dealing with it. Because freedom is not just material only, you know. Getting back your land is very much a part of freedom, but if you're not free mentally, you won't even know what to do with that land. So, you know, like as Steve Biko said, we have to infuse back life and dignity into the empty husk of the black person, because we have been so dehumanized. So identity is very important. It's a very important part of my activism. How do we infuse back what we have lost? That's one. And then when it comes to education, as someone who suffered Bantu education, and for the listeners, Bantu education was a very poor form of education that was meant to make the black child hewers of wood. We would learn things like, what's it called, home something, so how to bake.
It wasn't even second class,
you know, and gardening. You know, so basically that was meant so that we would never enter the mainstream market. We'd only ever be servants, you know, on our own land. So we in South Africa, for instance, we spend so much money on education. I think the biggest budget in this country goes to education. The damage is huge. You know, there's a lot that needs to be fixed. And I, as an activist who managed to succeed despite like the odds that were stacked up against me, I realize the importance of education and quality education. And to be honest with you, you can have quality education even under a tree, as long as you've got great teachers who know what they are doing. I despite the fact of Bantu education, I had good teachers who were passionate about what they were doing, and I turned out okay, regardless.
I think you turned out more than okay.
So basically, part of my activism is to go on a fact-finding mission to try and understand the core issues that plague our education system, because being told of mud schools, there's always been mud schools. Why does it seem like now things are breaking down? So I do that. I travel. I go to the schools. I talk to the kids. I talk to the teachers, the principals, the leaders in the community, the parents, to try and understand. And what I have found is that there has been a disempowerment that has happened post-94. As in people no longer feel like they should be in control over what happens in their societies, in their communities. They wait with hands held out for government to come and drop something on their hands.
And so definitely a lack of responsibility towards oneself and in terms of taking advantage of what is available and making your path and utilizing the tools that are available to you.
Yes, but that's our government, our ruling party made a mistake in 1994 by saying, we're going to come and fix everything, just relax, sit back, relax. We're going to come, we're going to give you free electricity, free everything, mahala. Right, they had good intentions, but you do not create a welfare nation. That's the worst thing that you can do for your people. That's not empowering them. That's disempowering them. So that is what has happened in the communities. Even when I hear of schools being vandalized, it's because people don't feel like they have ownership of those spaces. So we have to. I guess that's the part when we speak of identity, self-esteem, self-love, and all of these things. I guess that's the role black consciousness perhaps was supposed to play, and therefore we have to try and conscientize, our people when it comes to this. So basically re-empower them, infuse back that identity and dignity and humanity, because we are psychological beings, right? And people don't seem to understand, the impact of something like what happened on this continent is on the psyche of those people that it happened to. So yes, education dispossessed people, and also feminism.
We're glad to hear on all of those factors, given the nature and the genre of this particular show.
I know that I mentioned it last, but I guess maybe it's because I'm a woman and I'm so used to taking care of everyone else before I take care of myself.
But we'll definitely get more into that discussion a little bit later into the show. We'll take a short break.
Hi, I'm Zonke Dikana, a South African Afro-soul musician, songwriter and producer. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.
You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DSTV channel 902. Today we're talking to award-winning South African singer and entertainer Simphiwe Dana. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In our previous insert, Simphiwe shared some of her rural upbringing and the rhythm of life which was associated with almost every activity that was undertaken within the household, whether they were for chores or for pleasure, and talked us through some of her influences within her music and touched on her social activism work. Now going into the next segment of the show, I'd like to stay with the theme of your social activism. I understand that you are a convener of the African Union's reimagined creative hub. which considers how arts, culture, and heritage contribute to the AU's Agenda 2063 in terms of their role in shaping and reimagining the narrative of Africa that the world will see by 2063. And I know that you've touched briefly in terms of the identity and within the African continent and also changing and taking ownership and more responsibility through education. Can you tell us a little bit more about the project, the countries that are involved, the duration of the campaign?
Africa Reimagined Creative Hub came about. I was a guest in Addis Ababa of a separate program, and then I thought it was my first time in Ethiopia. If you want to meet people from all over the world on this continent, go to Ethiopia. You'll meet them, all the diplomats, they're in and out of Ethiopia. So I was there for a different program. And then I requested to meet with the chairperson of the AU, Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. And she granted me my request. And when I met with her, I had just read her vision for 2063. And she had written it in such a beautiful form or format where she made it, she wrote it in a way that it was a letter to Kwame Nkrumah, who is the founding father of the African Union, where she was basically reporting back to him what has happened in the 100 years since the AU was formed, or it was called the OAU then. And she has this vision of, you know, an integrated Africa, a unified Africa. We even actually treat Africa as one country. There's a confederation, you know, of Africa. You know, she puts it in such a beautiful way. And, you know, the people of the continent are benefiting from the riches that this continent has. She speaks of the blue economy. She speaks of how women are empowered. And I was like, wow, this can be so beautiful. But as we all know, African unity has been plagued by a lot of issues. You know, progress has been quite slow.
It has been slow. And in fact, she was one of our guests a couple of months ago, just mm-hmm. after the recent AU summit, where I love the theme of it, Year of Woman Empowerment and Development,
yes,
towards,
yes,
Africa's Agenda 2063.
Yes. So I said to her, I honestly believe that the reason why things have been so slow, development has been so slow, the unity has been slow on the continent, is because we do not put the artists at the center of African development. We do not utilize the voice of the artists, because we obviously will fast-track progress once we can unify as a continent. And when I say, like, once we can unify, you have to trust someone to do business with them. You have to trust them to deliver. You have to feel like you know and you understand them to even be able to start, you know, a multi-million dollar project with them. You have to have some sort of not necessarily kinship, but something close. You have to feel like you can depend on them. They can pull it off. And therefore, we on the continent, we are strangers to each other, even though we are so similar to each other. But we do not know each other well. And music is the quickest cultural conduit that we have.
And it offers so much diversity, and it's ever present. Everyone is always is a continuous listenership with,
yes,
music, and we get it from all parts of the world. There's,
and music is its
profusion.
Own language, right? And therefore, I did convince her, and she was convinced. So she, and then I asked her to task me with writing the arts and culture chapter of the AU's Agenda 2063, for which I would have to gather artists from all the 50 AU countries. The idea was to have at least three artists from different art disciplines, yeah, from each country. And I only had a month and a half. She gave me a month and a half.
That's a quick turnaround.
It's very quick. I don't even know how we did it. She gave me a team of people, and she gave me a month and a half, if not a month. And so my goal was to have 150 artists, But we managed 120, and we wrote the chapter. We have, and we even did a song together. We have a documentary coming out very soon. You know, it's just that the wheels of the AU move very slowly, so everything is coming together. And we have basically given the AU a plan how to quickly or fast-track development on the African continent. We had pages and pages of ideas that we then, you know, concretized into, you know, maybe like a one-page list of the things that, you know, can help to unify this continent.
How does that make you feel to be part of our continent's legacy?
You know, I'm a Pan-Africanist, right? But prior to going to Ethiopia, I was not as well traveled on the continent as I would have liked to. And what that did for me, that it opened me up to so many other artists on the continent. Like now I have my own network of artists. And it also just opened me up to all of these different cultures. And that has enriched me as an artist. You know, I'm going to be a better composer, that is for sure. But also, there are such opportunities to do collaborations with all of these different artists, and now we are like a family. We know each other and we check up on each other, you know. So we've created this African Union of Artists.
That sounds absolutely incredible, and I'm sure that by tapping into that market, it'll allow for greater fusion of all of these
artists.
Definitely.
This continent is rich. We, even us as the artists, we can make all of our money here. We don't have to go to the US. We don't have to go to Europe, you know, for money. We go there for new markets. We shouldn't have to be going there to make money. This continent is rich. It's just that we are not working together in a way that enriches us, its people.
Do you think we need to be more appreciative of ourselves, of our own values, of what we can do?
Well, I mean, in South Africa, for instance, it's a huge problem. Like this whole identity crisis that we have, it really impoverishes artists. We cannot have a country so invested in promoting the culture of another country. That makes no sense. It is completely nonsensical. How do you have, you know, state media promoting another culture over our own? That doesn't make sense. And also financially, also it makes no sense economically. All of this money leaving this country every year. Millions, if not billions, leaving this country and going mainly to America. That makes no sense. Something has got to give. We cannot continue like this.
So it needs to be a far more greater ownership in terms of people's collective responsibility, culture, countries to appreciate.
People have been given a chance to actually, you know, want to be a part of South Africa, and they have not jumped on it. So now, for me, it's a matter of policy. We need to change policy and put out quota systems that benefit this country, South Africa, and this continent. Anything less than that does not make sense.
I think that's an interesting perspective on pushing through, and also has a business aspect to it as well, to make it an economically viable,
Yes. Vibrant
industry.
Yes, I mean, all of this money could be staying right here. And, you know, if your artists are more empowered, they empower others. You create even a bigger industry. The money circulates here.
And one of the questions that I ask all my guests when we're talking about it from an empowerment point of view and a creativity aspect is, you have made significant achievements in your career and where you've got to date. What would you say have been some of the factors that have contributed to your success?
Well, I've had a lot of help along the way, what I call my guardian angels. I've also taken a lot of chances. You know, I my motto is luck will find you on the way to your success. Right?
Luck will find you On your way to success.
On the way to your success, yes. That's my motto. So I've taken lots of leaps of faith. Because I believe that what you are most passionate about, it can't be wrong. This is what you are here to do. And the universe will conspire with you in your favor if you follow your passions. So this is how I've lived my life. I've been chasing my passions. I mean, even when I chose to do IT after I finished high school, I chose it knowing that the end game is music, but I have to pay my way for
now. Yes.
I have to pay my way for now. I have to be able to pay rent, to help my mom, support my sisters. I'm the firstborn at home, you know. And then when I'm comfortable financially, then I'll be able to think clearly about music, which is what I did, right? But I've made sure throughout my life that I follow my passions. And I believe that our passions are gifts from God, and when we follow those passions, that's our gift back to God.
I think that's a fantastic attitude to have, and especially a beautiful expression of luck will find you on your way to success. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chaka-Chaka, and I'm UNICEF and Rollback Malaria Goodwill Ambassador. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in the struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy. A program against social ills such as racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka every week on this day at this time.
Today, we're talking to award-winning South African singer and entertainer, Simphiwe Jana. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In our previous segment, Simphiwe shared some of her social activism work, particularly as being a convener of the African Union's reimagined creative hub, which saw her amassing 120 other artists in terms of writing the chapter within the charter for the AU on how it reconsiders the role of arts, culture and heritage to fast-track change within the continent and drive unity. Now, Simphiwe, we're going into the last segment of the show, mm-hmm. and Womanity, Woman in Unity is all about gender equality. You mentioned earlier on in our first segment that feminism was part of your interests. Gender equality is increasingly becoming a global focus, and as such, we consider that building female leadership is critical to the future of women, not only within countries, but on a larger scale. How do you see female leadership, whether it is in parliament, whether it is in the business space, the music environment, or any other field for that matter?
Well, in South Africa, we as a woman, we actually should be quite thankful to Madiba, because he fought for proper gender representation, or equal representation, and he also fought that we would be given a hand up in the form of BEE, which favors the black woman more than anyone else. Those two have helped so much that you have many women leaders in good positions in South Africa who are running corporations, which is really awesome. I believe also Rwanda.
Rwanda leads the world in terms of female representation in parliament.
So
they've got 64%.
Rwanda is stellar. Actually, I would love to visit Rwanda very, very soon.
You must add that to your agenda.
Tell me about it. I want to go and see for myself, because it sounds like a miracle. We live also in a patriarchal society. And patriarchy is heavily intertwined with culture. As a result, when you stand up and say you are a feminist, you are viewed as anti-African. which I find very, very interesting. We have to find ways to root out patriarchy from culture, you know, because patriarchy is patriarchy, and it has existed in some form or another in most parts of the world. And we have woken up to the fact that it's oppression to women. But in Africa, we seem to believe different. You know, you'll have a conversation with a black man, and you agree on racism. It's bad, it's this and that. Then when you turn it and use the same conversation points to deal with patriarchy, they shut down completely. They don't want to hear it, you know, which is, I guess, their male privilege kicking in.
It's about socialization and what they've believed in and what has been taught to them, ingrained in them as they've grown up. And it's difficult to divorce yourself.
But the thing is, no one told them it was wrong.
You're exactly right.
That is what makes it so difficult to actually turn things around. It's been seen as right and as culture, as our way for the longest time, that when you stand up and say, no, hang on, that's oppression, you're oppressing a woman, they're like, what are you talking about? This is how we've been doing things for hundreds of years. And so that is the challenge with African feminism.
But do you think we'll come to a point where we'll be able to overcome these issues for the sake of women's development?
Well, the good thing in South Africa and Rwanda is that the women are empowered despite cultural sensibilities, right? And those women, once they become empowered, they empower others, right? And I believe personally, I could be wrong, I've not done the research, that the reason why there's so much more violence against women and it's so violent is because of the frustration of seeing like these women not being able to, not staying under your thumb, not jumping, not being controlled by you as a man.
Last year there was an article by our current Minister of Basic Education, Angie Mushekwa, and there she was talking about that very fact, that it's almost because of our empowerment that men are feeling threatened.
Yes. You know, they call it emasculation, which is complete rubbish. I'm sorry that so that is that retaliation, but at the same time it's not stopping the empowerment of women. More and more women are being empowered, and the patriarchal voice is being stifled more and more every day, you know, by the women. I mean, you also find women who are very patriarchal, and you also find men who are patriarchal. You know, it's quite tough, you know, because you'll have even women not seeing that they are oppressed and you know, attacking you for talking about feminism. You're saying it's an African, you know, don't touch our waist. You know, if you want to be a white person, go and be a white person somewhere else. It's quite tough. But every day, more and more people are buying into feminism, and more women are being empowered. And sooner than later, patriarchy is going to be gone. It might take 100 years, it might take 200 years, but one day it will be a thing of the past.
And it comes to us fighting and making sure that's the way. Now, Sipiwe, we're coming to the end of our show. In closing the discussion, can you please share a few words of inspiration that you'd like to impart to women on the continent listening?
You know, they say that if you empower a woman, you empower a nation. And that has been true for as long as I have been able to comprehend what's happening around me. So I want to challenge the women to really focus and not be waylaid in empowering their girl kids. This is very, very important. We need to empower our girl children because they are the ones most likely to empower the next generation. I'm not saying that men don't, but I don't know. Maybe having a child grow in your tummy does something to you that connects you much more than it does with a man. If you want to transform our societies, let's focus on empowering the women. And it's going to be good for all of us, both men and women.
Thank you very much for that important note. It's been a pleasure having you on our show.
And thank you so much, Doctor.
Forward to hearing more about your developments on a personal level and also the work that you're doing on the continent.
I will be back.
We welcome it. You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, and we have been talking to award-winning South African singer and entertainer Simpiwe Dana.